This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The Gaza Health Ministry says 31 people were killed when Israeli forces opened fire near an aid site in Rafah. President Trump has expressed some optimism that a deal for a ceasefire in Gaza could be close, but ABC's Ian Pannell in Tel Aviv says...
Now, some of that is going to be a very tough sell to the Netanyahu government, especially the right-wing elements who are part of his coalition, who absolutely will not agree to that and would probably threaten to resign, and that, in turn, would threaten the stability of Netanyahu's government. So there's a lot of politics involved here in people's lives.
The Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department says two people, including a police officer, were killed in a shooting. Another officer's hurt. The suspect is in custody. The European Union says it's ready with countermeasures for higher tariffs on steel and aluminum. President Trump announced Friday the tariffs would increase to 50% on June 4th. This is ABC News. The California High School Track and Field Championship features some of the nation's best high school athletes. And last week's meet got extra attention as a transgender teen competed and won.
AJ Hernandez, a trans teen, taking the top honors in the girls' high jump in California's track and field, but not without controversy. Sophia Laurie among those protesting outside the school this week.
This is basic biology and common sense. This is the erasure of female athletics.
Hernandez competed under a new rule change that allowed an additional student to medal in events where Hernandez qualified and a co-winner to be named. To Karina Cazada Adan, the compromise seems fair.
Just let the athlete compete with the fair compromise that was reached.
Dave Packer, ABC News.
The NBA Finals are set after the Indiana Pacers routed the New York Knicks. They're in the finals for the first time in 25 years. They'll face the Oklahoma City Thunder. Neither team's ever won a title. Game one is Thursday on ABC. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. We are in a rare moment right now in Wisconsin politics. Why, you ask? Well, it's because we are not actively in the middle of a campaign cycle. It's been more than 6 weeks now since any of us have seen a campaign ad. It's been pretty nice, hasn't it? The moment we're in is as close as we're going to get to a political off-season here in Wisconsin. And we need to take advantage of this moment by taking action to improve our democracy. That means taking steps to address money in politics, cleaning up some issues with election administration, and creating a long-term plan for nonpartisan redistricting. In some cases, we can't make these kinds of changes in the middle of a campaign, so we need to be thinking about what we can do now. There's a lot both parties can agree on here, too. So let's make some moves this offseason, Wisconsin. Seize this moment to make a better, stronger, more inclusive democracy.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. The House budget bill would reform environmental permitting in Wisconsin and nationwide, potentially streamlining the process and reducing litigation. Here's Brent Pivido.
Under the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, large projects with the potential to affect the environment must complete environmental assessments or impact statements. This includes all federal agencies and impacts private development projects that need federal permits. The new provision would create an expedited review process for a fee of 25% on top of the usual cost of a NEPA review. Thomas Hockman with the Foundation for American Innovation says the new rule would also shield projects from NEPA-related litigation.
There are quotes from folks like outgoing EPA General Counsel, who say 90% of the details in a NEPA review are purely there for litigation proofing the document. You can imagine if you only need 10% of the details in that environmental impact statement because you know that you are not at risk of litigation, that is almost certainly a radically faster timeline.
In court, federal agencies have an 80% success rate on appeal, and their environmental reviews are not often changed through litigation. One study of NEPA reviews shows solar energy projects face the highest litigation rate. Frequent litigation was also seen with pipelines, transmission lines, turbines and wind energy projects. Despite shortening the process, Hochman says the reforms may also make projects subject to shifting political agendas.
If you let each administration determine what the cost is and also spend time determining what the cost should be, you could potentially see differences in treatment. So, you know, maybe a Republican administration drags their feet and puts out a really high cost for a wind project that's going through an environmental impact statement. Maybe a Democratic administration does the same for a pipeline that's going through an environmental impact statement.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Brett Pivato. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly sunny but smoky skies today with highs close to 80 degrees. We'll have light winds. Overnight, a few clouds with lows of the upper 50s to lower 60s. On Monday, sunshine and smoke, quite warm and breezy with upper 80s. Currently 44 degrees.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome back comedian singer Rob Paravonian and Milwaukee-based actor Rob Martin, and I talk about our favorite movie gangsters. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Portions of Native Roots Radio may be pre-recorded.
You're listening to the best of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Wakunjahade, Distant Thunder. My colonized name is Robert Pilot. We discuss national and local Native American news and events. As we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
It's a good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he didn't cut it.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunjahade. Hey, Cudahy to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events, and as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. Hey, we got a jam-packed show. We have our friend Robert Lilligren coming on real soon, and we haven't talked to him in a couple weeks, and really excited to talk about what's going on in the community. I just want to give the community and our listeners a big shout out for listening to the show all these years. This has been we're in 9 years of the show started when Standing Rock happened, and what happened was that there was very little, if not none, people talking about what was happening at Standing Rock. And that was the pipeline going right through a reservation in the Dakotas. And we felt it really was important to talk about that. And we've been blessed to be on the air ever since. We started out as an hour show and then a 2 hour show. And now the last few years we've been on 5 days a week. And I just want to say a big peenie-geegie thank you to all our listeners out there. We really, really appreciate it. And we've had different guests on over the years. We've had people like Leonard Peltier, who's out now, and we say a big peenie-geegie to President Biden for the clemency. We've had actors on, we've had people that we really respect, and we have musicians, artists, writers. We've had so many different people on over the years, and I just want to give a big shout out and a big peenie-geegie to everybody, and again, listening to the show. I want to get our guest on here right away, Robert Lilligren. Welcome, Robert, CEO of Native American Community Development Institute here in the Minnesota in the Twin Cities. Welcome.
Yeah, bonjour, Robert. Thanks for having me.
It's so great to see you. It's been a couple weeks, and you are missed, and we really appreciate when you come on and like I talk about a lot, the what makes this show really great is the guests like you are like family now, and we talk about what's happening in the community, and you and I talk about what's happening nationally too, and also that we're getting up there in age, and we have to look at the next leaders and how we support them. And I know you personally, but again, Native American Community Development Institute have really been in the forefront of rising and raising up individuals in the community.
That is very kind, Robert. I appreciate all your kind words and having this time together. I always appreciate it. But right at this point in my life anyway, it's how do we prepare to leave things better for the next generations. And there's so many amazing emerging leaders here within the Twin Cities, and making sure that these folks are supported and given opportunity.
Yeah, definitely. And well, there's a lot still going on with the community, and we're still at the final stages here of Native American month here in Minnesota. And I know there's been some tragedy, but there's also been some growth. There's been some conversations about how we support people better in our community when they ask for help. And I know Native American Community Development Institute is in the forefront of these discussions.
You know, we're part of the conversation going on here, right? But so folks who aren't from Minnesota, who may not know, in Minnesota, the month of May is American Indian Month. And this was an initiative by the American Indian Movement back in the 70s and started as a week, and it's grown into a month. And as far as I know, this is the only state of the in the country that has this May as American Indian Month. And over the last years, it's become a really big deal, and communities across the state hold different kinds of events and celebrations and things. And so the big kickoff was scheduled for May 1st. And we did have some tragedy, as you pointed out here, that there were some shootings in the community over the day before May 1st. And so five people were shot dead within the community, and it just had such an impact. And there was a feeling of a lack of safety in the community, and that maybe celebrating wasn't the best thing for us to be doing on May 1st. And so we quickly, as a community, kind of re-envisioned this this kickoff event as a prayerful event. We had some spiritual and cultural carriers that did prayers. We had a drum, we had songs, and it was much more solemn an event mm-hmm. than I think we had planned for. But again, the community just adapted, and a lot of allies came forward as well. And so then slowly we kind of ramped up a lot of the activities that were planned. And I was away for a couple of weeks, so I missed some mm-hmm. of them, but I'm sure Robert, you were at a lot of the open houses and celebrations. Yeah. And then tomorrow we'll kind of finish it out. Mm-hmm. We'll have a scheduled kickoff parade tomorrow. The Minneapolis American Indian Center will have their powwow and 50th anniversary celebration tomorrow as well. Wow. I know.
Wow. Isn't that something? It makes sense, though, but oh, yeah. I don't like to think about that. Robert, we've always joked around, especially off air, about I always think 30 years ago was like the 1970s, but really it's the 1990s.
Right.
30
years ago. Right. Yep. It's a ways back there. No, but yeah. So, you know, it's again the community kind of healing, coming together, mm-hmm. but also recognizing we have things to celebrate, right? And so mm-hmm. So let's celebrate and recognize that we still have a lot of progress to be made.
Well, and then also with celebrating too, I believe too, I talked to State Senator Mary Kunish today, and talk about all the good things too that have happened maybe in the last dozen years or 10 years that you know our our relatives would have never thought of happening too. So there's a lot of celebrating too.
There is, and I'm glad you bring up Senator Kunesh, one of our Native elected leaders who's just done groundbreaking work at our state legislature. And I think I've talked to you about this before, you know, being a growing elder and being where I am in my trajectory and kind of life and career, that recently I've had to stop and kind of recalibrate my perception and my perspective about where we are as a community, and to try to make sure that I'm not kind of trapped back in limiting sort of where we can go and what we can do, and to really embrace the progress that we've made and how it feels like, at least here, it's accelerating. Well, and I think on a national scale as well. And so so to not limit myself by kind of thinking, oh, well, this is as far as we can go, or, you know, I pushed as hard as I can or whatever. It's right. Really limitless. And I just feel really fortunate to be alive in this era, but be part of what's happening.
Well, you know, too, like having the show, and we're in our ninth season, believe it or not, and talking to young leaders coming up, like we had Ruth Anna Buffalo on, and we had somebody working from Minnesota Indian Women's Resource on, and it's just like young, enthusiastic, and there for the community, and seeing that and hearing that here on Native Roots Radio, I've been blessed to see that secondhand.
Right, and Ruth, I mean, I'm a big fan of Ruth Buffalo's and what she's brought to our immediate ecosystem here, and so that's a perfect example with her organization, Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. But she comes in with sort of a fresh perspective. She's a former elected state representative in North Dakota, and she's not really limited, right? She is very innovative, out of the box, and it's just exciting to see what she's doing with the community.
Hey, we're here with Robert Lilgren, and we're going to be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
News from the center, WRCE. Summer. It's time for Civic Media's Scotty Summer Text to Win contest right here on this local Civic Media radio station. We want to hook you up with $100 cash, Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets, and the chance to win a summer getaway to the Wisconsin Dells area or an escape to Door County. Download the free Civic Media app in the Google Play or App Store and get ready to text in for your first chance to win in this statewide contest starting Monday, June 2nd at 7 a.m. It's Civic Media's Scotty Summer. Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
Matt Miller, Milwaukee-based film critic. The film Sinners, the more distance I have from it, the more I liked it. Is that an Oscar film?
I think there is a love for what Sinners is doing, that a studio movie was this interesting and creative and thoughtful, but also entertaining. This is not the last you will hear about Sinners this year. I'd be shocked if it doesn't get a Best Picture nomination.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awakened. This is Robert Pilot. Hey, welcome back, everyone. We are here with Robert Lilgren, CEO of Native American Community Development here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis. And, you know, we're kind of reminiscing, but also in a good way, how far, you know, I've always been told to look how far I've come as opposed to how far I have to go. And sometimes we have to do that to be really grateful. And I'm grateful for what I see. I know it's dark federally right now, but Robert, you know, we've gone through worse.
We have gone through worse. You know, I always, we're the resilience people, right? And so this doesn't feel as unfamiliar to us, I think, as it does to some folks. And for me, I've decided to, in this next new era, to find the joy, to live in gratitude, and as sort of a coping mechanism in some ways. But I like what you said, you know, we can instead of, rather than looking at how far we have to go, look at how far we come in on the shoulders of the people that we stand on as well, right? The people who have made progress. And yeah, we're very fortunate.
So yeah. And we've been fortunate to know these people. You know, I know for me personally, I love history, and having walked with history, whether it was Clyde Belcourt or even having Leonard Peltier on the show. I mean, these things I just get jazzed about. And then I realize, well, geez, I'm old too. These guys were like the groundbreakers, and there's a lot of things that we wouldn't have if they didn't speak up.
Agree. And fight the fight, right? And I think of that generation as the founders. And that's in my mind. And you know, we've lost so many of them recently. They're such, now they're our treasured ancestors, but they've left us quite a legacy. You're right. And so I feel like people like you, me, we're almost the exact same age, and sort of where we are in the generational trajectory, you know, we have an obligation to the founders to make sure that what we're passing on to the next generations is strong, intact. And just another thing that kind of indicates sort of how far we've come and then where we have to go, but I'm sure you followed this news as a St. Paul resident, but two important public spaces in St. Paul are going to be renamed to reflect the Dakota heritage here. And this is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's been an incredible level of activism from the community, responsiveness from the public sector jurisdictions that are involved, but a reserve that was formerly called Bruce Vento, he was a revered congressperson, mm-hmm. in the area, is now going to be renamed Wakan Tipi, you know, the holy dwelling or dwelling of the divine. And then the Mounds Park, which was burial mounds, right? That was kind You're of right. desecrated through the years, but that is going to be returned to a Dakota name, and I don't know how to say it. Do you?
No, not yet, but we did talk about this, and it is such a big deal because I remember as being, we talk about being old, but I remember being, I think the Winter Carnival had a castle up there one year, and people were walking all over the mounds, and I mean that's 50 some years ago, but it's in my lifetime.
Well, for sure. I think that word is something like, and I'm not a Dakota speaker, but Imnizaska, something like uh-huh. that. I think it means like gravesite or graveyard, and the site is just across the Mississippi River from downtown St. Paul at the top of these white chalky cliffs where the name for Minnesota emerged, and above, just above Wakan Tipi, which is an eminently holy site. And yeah, and it was treated very poorly for a long time. But I will note that the St. Paul City Council, who had authority to request and make this name change, voted unanimously to support both of these name changes. And it's easy to imagine not all that long ago that wouldn't have been a unanimous decision. It might not even been a decision they made.
Exactly.
So progress. It's progress.
Yeah, exactly. And I know people talk about that area too, because I remember years ago we were fighting a splash pad there. And because our ancestors were buried there. And what was told to me is that there's only three remaining mounds, but there were hundreds of mounds up there.
Sure. Yeah. There's the three remaining. And if I'm not mistaken, and please don't quote me on this, I think only one of them is really intact. Mm-hmm. The others have been plundered, but they're still there. The mounds are there. And yeah. But I remember that splash pad plan.
Yes.
The community was kind of up in arms.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So and that wasn't that long ago, right? That was within maybe the last 10 years.
Definitely. Yeah.
So just progress. As a community, Native people, in this case, Dakota people and allies, are really steering their own narrative. It's not taking what's handed to us. So I'm impressed. I'm very impressed.
And I was impressed about how the young ones came out on that when we were talking about the splash pad. I believe it was like, I was still teaching, so I believe it was like 8 years ago, maybe. Okay. You're right around there. And that was a learning curve for the community, but also the community that lives there, but also for us natives too. And that's one of the great things about resisting is you find these things out that you don't know, but maybe somebody else in our native community knows.
Right, right. I think that's really an important observation, Robert, in that the sort of style of engagement and activism and advocacy has really grown in effectiveness. And, you know, as a community, we don't always agree. No big surprise there. We're not a homogenous group.
Right.
And I think we've become really aware over the last decade or so here how when we do come to a common understanding, a common objective, a common message, and we all go forward expressing that in unity, how powerful we are. And I still kind of surprised when I see how we're moving the dial here by doing that, by uniting as a community, doing the hard work to getting to a united position or united objective, but then really presenting to the outside world this unity. It's strong.
It is strong. And I believe, too, a lot of people have come back to the community and come back strong. And I know I'm one of them that I was gone for a long time. And I see that in other people, too, that are finding a place to be, and that's in the Native community. And that's super strong.
Agree. And then as a community, you know, here we're in the urban setting, right? There's 100 tribes represented within the population of the Twin Cities. You know, we have our 11 federally recognized tribes. Mm-hmm. And so it's very diverse. And so we have to be deliberate as a community about how we come together, how we express our indigeneity, and how we can come together. And we have these fundamental kinds of conversations that we have here and that we need to have, you know, issues about, are we a shunning community or are we a reconciling community? You know, if we are one of those things, how do we express that? If we are a reconciling community, what are those mechanisms? How do we engage elders and others to help us do that? And it's not like if we were in our original tribes, it'd probably be a lot easier, right? We would know, everyone would know
what
we are. But here we're always having to define it in real time.
Wow, I really have to think about that. That's awesome that you brought that up. One of the things I really enjoy about having conversations with you and other leaders is that our listening audience, because we're having a conversation here, and our listening audience really, really digs it and learns. And that's, we have so many allies out there that listen to this show and listen to AM 950 and civic media all across the country and appreciate this kind of talk because they don't know.
They don't. And I think you're right that there's at least I've experienced amongst allies, a stronger interest in understanding.
Yeah.
In engaging, in learning how to be a good ally.
Yeah.
Even. And, you know, just today at the office at NACTI, Native American Community Development Institute, we have our All My Relations Arts Gallery. And, of course, Palo Grande's Coffee Shop, which is a huge community gathering point. And so today, our Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, was visiting with her staff and her husband. Yeah. And then she gave us a day or two notice that she's going to be by. She had some meetings that she was taking in the coffee shop, and but she wanted a tour of the gallery and the new exhibit. But both she and her husband are just like thirsty for this knowledge. And her husband especially, you know, they spent some time during COVID lockdown out in the Black Hills area.
Oh, wow.
And that sparked his interest in Native culture. And he was just asking these probing questions. It was really exciting.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, because I had Ilhan on early in her career, and I'd like to talk a little bit about that. Hey, we're here with Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute, and we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The Gaza Health Ministry says 31 people were killed when Israeli forces opened fire near an aid site in Rafah. President Trump has expressed some optimism that a deal for a ceasefire in Gaza could be close, but ABC's Ian Panel in Tel Aviv says...
Now, some of that is going to be a very tough sell to the Netanyahu government, especially the right-wing elements who are part of his coalition, who absolutely will not agree to that and would probably threaten to resign, and that, in turn, would threaten the stability of Netanyahu's government. So there's a lot of politics involved here in people's lives.
The Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department says two people, including a police officer, were killed in a shooting and other officers hurt. The suspect is in custody. The European Union says it's ready with countermeasures for higher tariffs on steel and aluminum. President Trump announced Friday the tariffs would increase to 50% on June 4th. This is ABC News.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Revenge for Rhys Hoskins. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers and the Phillies wrap up their series today at Citizens Bank Park. A full recap this evening. Yesterday, the Brewers' Rhys Hoskins with a pair of three-run homers against his former team, the Phillies, leading Milwaukee to a 17-7 win in Philadelphia. The Brewers knocked the Phillies starter, Jesus Luzardo, out of the game by early in the fourth inning. Manager Pat Murphy after the win.
I mean, he's got great stuff. He's a guy that we would love to have. Anybody in baseball would love to have him. He's one of the great ones in the game. His stuff is tremendous. We did have a good plan against them, and we executed. And we're playing with a lot more freedom, and that freedom creates some special things. So we put it all together.
NBA, the Indiana Pacers, the team that ended the Bucks season early in the playoffs, are headed to the finals. They knocked out the Knicks 125-108 last night in Indy to take the Eastern Conference Championship 4-2. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Mostly sunny but smoky skies today with highs close to 80 degrees. We'll have light winds. Overnight, a few clouds with lows of the upper 50s to lower 60s. On Monday, sunshine and smoke, quite warm and breezy with upper 80s. Right now, it's 43.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. New York City Mayor Eric Adams had his bribery and corruption charges dropped by the U.S. Department of Justice under questionable circumstances in April. Because of those charges, the New York City Campaign Finance Board denied Adams matching campaign funds. Adams is now suing to get those funds. Mayor Adams was accused last December by the Biden DOJ with taking campaign donations from foreign nationals and businessmen, allegedly using straw donors to make them appear as legitimate donations. He was also accused of doing favors in exchange for luxury travel and attempting to conceal those transactions. We reported in February that the DOJ dropped bribery and corruption charges against Adams after Adams visited Trump at Mar-a-Lago. An apparent Trump directive to drop the charges to the DOJ's Southern District of New York resulted in the resignations of 7 experienced prosecutors. As a result of the corruption charges and paperwork omissions, the New York Campaign Finance Board denied Adams $4 million in matching funds for his campaign from the state's taxpayer-funded campaign finance option. Now that the charges have been dropped, Politico reports that Adams is now suing the board to recover $3.4 million of those denied funds. The Campaign Finance Board will reportedly revisit Adams' eligibility for funding in July. Find our past reports on Adams at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Matt and Air on Air.
Congressman Mark Pocan is here. Are you planning on going out on the road again, having a couple more town halls?
Yes. No, Claire. Derek and I have been invited by Opportunity Wisconsin, so I'm really looking forward to debating Derek. My guess is it's more likely I will sprout a head full of hair than he will show up. This is important to let people know what's in this bill, because there is a very good reason why Republicans are hiding from town halls.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. We'll check in with State Senator Calda Royce from the Joint Finance Committee on the state budget and also news headlines with folks at Wisconsin Watch. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Native American Community Development Institute, or NACDI, in Minneapolis.
Hey, yes, it is. Hey, we have our friend Robert Lilligren here, Native American Community Development Institute, CEO. And we left off talking about Ilham. And I remember when she first ran, she was on her show. And I'm not sure, Wendy, was that Pilots Progressive Party that we did?
I think it was, yes.
And we talked about Native issues, and she was not too hip to what was going on. But, man, is she learned a lot in a good way over the years.
I agree. And I've just been so impressed with her growth and development. I knew her back when I was in City Hall.
Yeah.
And she worked for a Minneapolis City Council member, and then entered politics at the state legislature, and now she represents us in D.C. for in Congress. And I just, one of the things I'm so impressed, she shows up in community, right?
Yes.
And, you know, today was very low key. She had some meetings at Powell Grounds Coffee Shop. She and her husband wanted to see the show in the gallery. And so there was this kind of a low key approach. We knew she was coming, but she'll just show up at community events. And often I'll go up to her, especially if I'm emceeing or something, and say, you know, would you like the mic for a minute? Do you want to talk to your constituents? And she says, no, I'm just here to be in community and with community. And I really respect that. There's not a lot of politicians that would refuse a microphone when offered.
Absolutely. And I remember seeing her many times in the past 4 or 5 years at our sunrise service, and just being low key too. I mean, I had to tell people that she was there because she was so low key that when they were acknowledging leaders.
That's a great example. And so we in Minnesota now, we in Minneapolis, we've had it for a while. We have Indigenous Peoples Day in the second Monday of October. and we've had a sunrise ceremony consistently on one of our major lakes, Bede Makoska, not so long ago. The name was changed to a Dakota name from an offensive slaveholder's name. And and it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful ceremony, and it grows so much every year. And I remember the first one was just a small circle. Now it's hundreds of Congresswoman Omar, a lot of elected show up, and it's not a political event, right?
Right.
It's a ceremony. So there aren't speeches or anything, but we do try to acknowledge our allies who are there. And you're right, she kind of just slips in. She's easy to miss. So I appreciate your making sure she's always recognized.
Yeah, it's a big deal. Hey, one of the things that's interesting is my real job as a Ho-Chunk legislator is ending. And one of our elders told me, well, now you can make these mud meetings. And I went, I plan on it. And, you know, and that's a good thing to bring up in a good way.
Cool. That would be great to see you there. So MUD is an acronym, M-U-I-D, Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors. And it's now, it must be almost 55 years old. It's a continually meeting leadership forum in the Twin Cities. And it's currently comprised of about 36 Native organizations and the executives of Native organizations. The tribal urban offices are represented as well. And, you know, in an urban setting like this, we don't have our sovereign governments, right? We're just a bunch of nonprofits. We don't pretend to be anything but that. But amongst our orgs, we really engage with huge segments of the community. And so we've come together. It was formed 50 plus years ago by a group of, I think it was 7 executive directors, all women of Native orgs who just needed to support, right? They needed to support each other. So they've come together, and over the decades, it's grown into quite a force within the Twin Cities, and, you know, very influential elected officials, philanthropy, but government comes to MUD, Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, when they're seeking guidance in trying to be more culturally inclusive. And so So yeah, it'll be great to see you there more. It's a strong collective, right?
Yes.
And it's listened to.
Yes. Well, and then some of the things I know that you've been working on too is our unsheltered relatives in the MUD community. I know you personally and in a lot of the groups that you are involved with, not only Native American Community Development Institute, but the Met Council, which is a very, very powerful organization in the Seven County area, and 17 other groups that you're involved with. What kind of things we talk about our unsheltered relatives, and I know MUD really speaks highly on that.
Yeah, and so thanks for asking. And you know, there are these incredible sort of pieces of community infrastructure that have come together to help support our relatives living without shelter, our relatives living within with substance use, especially opioids. And so through the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors, since a huge homeless encampment appeared in on our American Indian Culture Corridor back in 2018, a subcommittee of Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors have been coming together to address short-term, mid-term, long-term solutions to our relatives living at the intersection of lack of home, lack of housing, and substance use. And then all these related things, right? Like our latest conversation is about commercial sexual exploitation and trafficking, you know, very adjacent violence in the community can be adjacent as well. And this group, we had a meeting on Wednesday of the whole, it's a community sort of based meeting. There were over 60 people there from all levels of the community, people experiencing unsheltered homelessness, outreach people, organizational people, public sector agencies at the city, state, county levels, all come together in one room and start to address these needs. And it's very powerful. And one of the people who works at the state level on housing issues said to me just last night, she said, that is my favorite meeting on my calendar. And Robert, I got to tell you, a ton of people say that, non-Native people. And we're dealing with heavy stuff, right? It's not happy, happy, joy, joy stuff. But there's just something so positive and I guess hopeful about having all of these voices together, the non-Native allies really kind of step out. So the Native voices are leading the conversation. And it's really changing a system. And it's so rewarding to be part of that. And then sort of an offshoot of that through the Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors is that we now have what we call the multi-jurisdictional response to unsheltered homelessness, where the Native community is leading the state, the county, the regional government, the city government, executives, people who control resource holders, right? And trying to build out a holistic system that will support individuals, will support our relatives to success. So it's not just about shelter, or it's not even just about chemical health or mental health or physical health. It's about what are people's dreams and how do they reach them? So it might be education, it might be mentoring, it might be economic development, it might be a job, right? So we're trying to build a system. And I got to tell you, Robert, in all my years in the public policy realm, this is the most traction I felt and the most hope I felt that we can actually improve the system with Native voices leading.
That's awesome. And I think we all, and it's interesting you talked about our white allies too. I think we all are looking for a place of community, and that sounds really powerful and, you know, and opening to everybody, because you know we talk about the medicine wheel, right?
And by numbers, we're a small community, right? And right. So to really get anything done, to do systems change, we need our allies. And so this group, this Metropolitan Urban Indian Directors subcommittee that I chair on these issues, the allies went together and you know made a sort of a standard of conduct document about how to be a good ally, and it's just beautiful, right? And the first, I think it's the first article is Native Voices Lead, and yeah, so it's just there's It's this kind of goofy little group. Our revered ancestor, Marlene Hagemo,
and
our elder, Mike Gozy,
who
prompted this group to come together at All Nations Church here back during the era of the Wall of Forgotten Natives.
Mm-hmm. It's
been growing since then, and there's something special happening there, and it's exciting to be part of it.
Well, I can't wait. I got another month, and I'll be showing up to those meetings for sure.
Congratulations on your service to your nation.
Well, and I really appreciate you saying that. And you had a lot to do and support me when I ran. I just, things weren't in the cards for the second run. We kind of got gerrymandered out of the Twin Cities. But I have nothing but good thoughts, because there's so much, as you know, Robert, it took me a couple of years to figure out how this government ran.
Right. Yeah, just when you're figuring it out, right?
Yeah. But, good things ahead, and, a chance to be in the community. And I think, not to take away what tribal governments do, because I know it's daunting and every day, but it seems to me like groups like you and American Indian Movement and all the groups that have been around, with less people making decisions, more things happen. And I've gotten to appreciate that more.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. And, a tribal government is responsible to their nation, right, and to their citizens.
Right.
And so it's a little different in the urban community. We're not in our sovereign territory here. And so it's understandable. The focus for the tribal government is on the tribes. In the urban centers, it's the urban community.
Absolutely. Well, Robert, I just want to say I'm glad you're back. And I hope to see you tomorrow at the parade. Very important for our community.
10:00 gathering at Little Earth for the folks who are in town.
Yeah. Do you want to say that again? I think I was talking over you.
Yeah. 10 a.m. gathering at Little Earth, Cedarfield Park, right outside Little Earth of United Tribes here in Minneapolis. And we'll step off at 10:30.
Well, again, Pinigigi, thank you so much for coming on, and all you do for the community and all you've done for the community over the years. We have to really get into your past, too, because it's unbelievable what the glass ceilings that you've broken over the years. So, again, thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you. Chimigwech.
We'll see you tomorrow. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. Up next, Wendy. Hey, Wendy, with your sacred animal portion here.
Excited to talk about animals as usual.
Right on. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
Oh.
News from the center, WRCE.
Summers in Worthington, Minnesota bring fun, and a good portion of that fun happens around our beautiful 800-acre Lake Okabena. Our community is built around it, and it has great walleye fishing and several lakeside parks. This June 13th and 14th, we'll have our Windsurfing Regatta and Music Festival. It's free. Come and see the windsurfers, eat from over a dozen food vendors, and attend free lakeside concerts on our professional city stage, this year featuring Viva Knievel and Cooper Allen. Check us out. We're Worthington, Minnesota, and we're certainly worth a look.
The Todd Albaugh Show.
Positive psychology coach Kira Sabin. It is great to have you back.
I love the idea of self-help, but there's also something called community help. We have become so divided. We've forgotten that our neighbor is really nice and makes great cookies and probably has the same concerns on a daily basis that you do. I think that we think things have changed, and I think we're just have stopped talking to each other.
Catch the Todd Albaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app. This is News from the Center, WRCE.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oho, this is Dallas Goldtooth, and you're listening to the Native Roots Radio. Hoka, hecha, wecha.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
In this portion of the show, we'd like to bring awareness to our Minnesota wolf population. Say no to the hunt.
No.
Woo.
No.
No.
Hey, this is our sacred animal portion here. And Wendy, you've been doing this for 9 years on Native Roots Radio. I was a young person when we started the show.
Yeah, we were both young.
Hey, I want to introduce my awesome and beautiful wife, Wendy. Wendy's been an animal advocate for many years, probably all your life, right? And
probably, yeah.
And we started with a 2-minute segment on the show, and then it became a whole segment. And I'm glad it is, because I've learned so much, and I appreciate, and it's changed my thoughts on a lot of things too. So yeah. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Hey everybody, my name is Hana Jihihani. That means cares for them, and I was given that name by my Dagger Curtis. Curtis goes by Mashke Hana Jingo, which means walks on white clouds. I'm a humane policy volunteer for Humane World for Animals. So I'm a policy volunteer for Humane World for Animals. It still doesn't come off my tongue as as nicely as it should, because we used to be called the Humane Society of the United States, and now it's Humane World for Animals, which I like that name much better. I just have to get my tongue to say it nicely and smoothly. So
cool.
You're not going to believe this, Robert. I found on my Facebook feed, right?
Oh.
There was a post from Flights and Routes Every Day. It's mm-hmm. called Flights and Routes Every Day. It's a Facebook page, and they post stuff.
Uh-huh.
So this on this just the other day, I'm going to read this. So a Delta Airlines flight from Detroit to Los Angeles made an unexpected stop in Minneapolis, not for weather or fuel, but to save a sick dog's life.
Oh.
Yeah. Roughly an hour into the journey on May 26th, a pet traveling in the cabin became noticeably unwell. Flight attendants issued an onboard call for a veterinarian and found one.
Wow.
With input from the vet and concerns that continuing could be life-threatening, the captain diverted to Minneapolis-St. Paul. Paramedics met the dog and owner on arrival. Delta later confirmed the pet had recovered.
Oh.
Yeah, this was Delta Flight 837, operated by Airbus 8321, carrying 181 passengers, and it was delayed by 2.5 hours, arriving in Los Angeles just after 1 o'clock. And this is a quote: "The safety of our customers and people come before everything else," Delta said.
Yeah.
It's not the first animal-related diversion this year. In April, a United flight rerouted after a dog defecated in the aisle.
Oh.
Yeah, that might be bad.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd want to be on that flight. That must have been really bad.
Depending on how big the dog was.
Exactly.
Well, have to be small.
You
be
never know. If it's a service dog, they could be any size. So,
Yeah.
Earlier this month, pigeons twice grounded a Delta A220 in Minneapolis, but a dog saved midair? That's rare. And depending on who you ask, kind of heartwarming. So that was the post.
I got to say this, Wendy. When we fly, I'd say 90% of the time when we're going to New York, we take our dog.
Yeah, we do take Wanda with us. Yeah, we do. I mean, she's a little dog. She weighs less than 10 pounds. She's in a little soft little carrier. It fits right under the seat in front of us. But I have to call ahead, and I have to book her on my ticket. And then when we check in, we have to go to the, you know, we have to go to the service desk. We have to check her in. They have to give her a tag for her little carrier.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets like a little boarding pass. So she gets her little doggy boarding pass.
Well,
and
I think the last time that I took her back by myself, there was an empty chair, which I totally lucked out and put her next to me, and she was awesome.
Yeah. Depends on the flight attendants, too. I mean, I've had some of them where it's like, oh, yeah, it's okay to unzip it a little and let her head pop out, you know. And I've had others where like, no, that's against the rules. You have to keep her underneath the front, you know, the seat in front of you. You know, sometimes I'll pick her up and just put the whole carrier on my lap and then put my hand inside just to pet her.
Yeah.
It helps me as well.
Yeah.
You know, it does.
I forget about how good of a flyer you were. You've really come a long way, come to think of it, since we first 20-some years ago met each other.
Absolutely. Oh. Yeah, I was not a good flight person.
You are now.
Yeah. Well, I had a bad flight once, so, you know, scary.
Oh, yeah.
So I have a couple of, you know, I haven't done this in a while, but I have two cartoons, you know, so I describe the little cartoons and I tell you about them, and they're pretty funny.
I know it's funny that you do that, I think it's hilarious, but you do such a good job at it. So that's awesome.
Sometimes they're hard to describe. So here are two cartoon dogs. One is very, very old with no teeth, and one is very young. And they look like they're walking through the park, and the old dog has a cane, and he's walking with a cane, and they're talking to each other. So the old dog says, "I can't for the life of me remember where I buried them all." And the young dog said, "Relax. At your age, it's normal to experience some memory and bone loss."
Oh, jeez.
Ta-dum-dum.
Wait a minute. Yeah, I got to find that. There it is.
There we go. Exactly. I know.
I spilled my water looking for that button.
Okay. Well, now you have it handy. You have to make a little mark at it. Okay. So here's another one. And there's a dog in the living room, and he's dancing. So he's break dancing in the living room, this dog. And it looks like he's dressed like John Travolta from, Saturday Night Fever. Yeah, he's got bell bottoms on and a like sparkly shirt with a big collar, and his chest is hanging out. So the dog's dancing in the living room, and the his people are in the living room watching him. So there's a woman and a man. So the woman says, "I think we've told him to get down too many times."
Wait, is it? Where? There it is.
So they're kind of funny. I really like them. Yeah. So I've been talking about the hummingbirds. So the hummingbirds are around. You know, we have a lot of our garden in our front yard, which we took, you know, a few years back. We took away our grass. We have no grass. We just have all pollinator plants and flowers out there. So we have these plants. Excuse me. I have no idea what they're called. I'm like the worst gardener.
Wait a minute.
I can't. It's terrible. It's like, I don't know what they are. So anyway, I feel embarrassed about it. But anyway, they have like the like cup shaped, like, so they hunt for hummingbirds. But anyway, keep your, and I talk about this all the time, and I probably talked about this already, but keep your hummingbird friends happy and healthy. Hummingbird nectar can spoil, especially in hot weather. So remember to regularly empty and clean their feeders, even if it doesn't look like they've been touched. Yeah, so if it's less than 70 degrees out, you could do it once a week. So it's 70 degrees, once a week, clean the feeder. You want to just feed it. You want to clean it with hot water and white vinegar. That's all you want to do. Don't use any type of soap because it leaves residue and it could poison the poor little hummingbirds.
Yeah, we get the hummingbirds in our backyard. Yeah. We're gonna have to do that again.
I know. So if it's like 71 to 75 every 6 days, 76 degrees to 80 degrees every 5 days, and so on and so forth. 81 degrees to 84 every 4 days. If it's really hot, every 85 degrees to 88 degrees every 3 days. And if it's really hotter than that, just do it every day. Because what happens is the sugar in the solution ferments, and then the little hummingbird sticks their tongue in it, and it gets stuck on their tongue, and then they can't retract the tongue back in their body.
Oh.
Yeah, it could really harm them and even kill them, really. So just, if it's a commitment, you can't just put out a hummingbird feeder with some solution in it and just leave it there for the rest of the summer. And believe me, I'm guilty of it because I didn't know about this.
Well, we have a commitment. We're changing the water for the ducks out there every 3 times a day. So I don't see a problem with us doing it.
Exactly. Jeez. Yeah.
Hey, thanks to Robert Lilligren, Native American Community Development Institute. And of course you, Wendy, appreciate you. And all the information that you bring, I never knew that about hummingbirds until you told me.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're listening to this show, you are part of the resistance from Chief Plenty Coops, the ground in which we stand on. It's sacred ground. It's the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Maggie Dawn.
At 4:30, I'll be joined by senior ranking member of the state's Joint Finance Committee, Senator LaTanya Jackson, to talk about the Republicans' cuts that will affect you and yours.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. President Trump has suggested that Israel and Hamas are close to agreeing to a ceasefire. But today, the Gaza Health Ministry is accusing Israeli forces of opening fire at a food distribution site in Gaza, killing many and injuring hundreds. ABC's Ian Panels in Tel Aviv.
More than 30 people killed trying to get food in Gaza, according to the Hamas-run health ministry. Ambulances packed with victims flooding into Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. The militants and eyewitnesses accusing Israeli forces of opening fire near a US-run food distribution center. The IDF saying it's unaware of injuries caused by its troops, but it's reviewing what happened.
President Trump has pulled his nominee to lead NASA, Jared Isaacman, a billionaire entrepreneur with ties to Elon Musk. The president cited a review of his previous associations. And two people, including a police officer, killed in a Los Angeles shooting. Another officer hurt. This is ABC News.
Local radio for you and your community.